I think when it comes to decision making and communications, I think it actually goes hand in hand, because we can communicate the decisions, but I think to employees is not about the communications, about the action, right? You can talk, you can have a good talk, but it's about the walk.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today, we've got a special guest. Lucas Baselli is with us. But before we get into that conversation, I want to invite you, if you haven't already, to make sure you subscribe. We have a brand new episode out every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., and we don't want you to miss a single episode, because you never know who's going to be on the podcast. And this one's a pretty exciting episode, so we don't want you to miss any of them. To do that, all you've got to do is go to lockdoc.net/podcast, and you can subscribe there to any of the podcast platforms that you wish, or you can follow us on YouTube and Facebook and subscribe and like us there, and you will get a video version of the podcast every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. as well. So we invite you to do that. It's exciting. We have all kinds of fun conversations around business ideas, practices, and strategies, and we've got a really good one to share with you today. Lucas Baselli is the Executive Vice President and the head of the Americas Division of ASSA ABLOY. And it's interesting because he's a guy that's running a corporation with over 10,000 employees, a segment, a division with 10,000 employees, responsible for a little over $2 billion in annual revenue. And he's sitting at the desk with us today to discuss making decisions and the impact of decisions. And it's really cool to be able to sit at the table with somebody like this and be able to learn from their experiences and how they're applying it on a massive scale, so that you and I can take those experiences and apply them at whatever scale and whatever position that we're in. So I hope you're ready for a great conversation today. It's a very direct, very opening conversation, and we're about to dive right into it. So grab a cup of coffee and get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say, we got a podcast to make, we're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
Oh yeah. Welcome again to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Chad, thanks for the hospitality and another great cup of coffee.
We got two espressos down, so now it's going to be... see how long we can hold on. You're used to this, though.
Sure. Two more to go.
What's your typical coffee count for the day?
I'll say a few large cups in the morning, and then one after lunch, and an afternoon booster.
There you go.
Why not?
Why not? That's a good rhythm. That's a good rhythm. Well, we'll get into who you are and what you're about momentarily. But first, rapid fire. Five randomly selected questions just to get under your skin with unknown point values.
Let's do it.
You ready? Question number one, what's your favorite day of the week?
Wednesday.
Wednesday? Elaborate.
We're halfway there.
Yeah?
Some good things behind that we've accomplished during the week, but still some great things to be done the rest of the week.
All right.
I think it's a good place. As we record this podcast on a Wednesday,
sure.
It's a good day.
No, there you go. it's kind of that midweek breath of, okay, we can do this.
And also to look back, I think a lot of things, good things during the week already take place Monday and Tuesday. And we get a refresher to say that, but also we're getting close to the end of the week. So how can we accelerate some things and push through the finish line?
Yeah, I like Mondays. I used to hate Mondays many, many years ago, hated Mondays. And it took me a while, but I got really much engaged with Mondays are like my day. Fresh start. Fresh slate. Let's go accomplish something big. So that's very intriguing. All right. Next question. If you inherited or won $1 million, what's the first thing you would do?
I would probably give it away.
Give it away.
Yeah. I think it's there's a lot more people that need that $1 million than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thankful for the I've been blessed with a comfortable life with my wife and my kids, but I think that's something that all of us can do more is to help people that don't have even the basic needs. And I think sometimes we take that for granted or don't do enough, but I would give away.
There
not all to one organization or to one destination, but I would spread the love.
There you go. Very a high level of generosity. All right, here's a question for you. This might be actually interesting. Question number three. What jobs did your parents have?
My mom was a translator for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Then she moved into advertising.
Okay.
And my father was a financial consultant a long period of time. And he always told me, don't ever get a credit card. That's how he made his money. So, but it was, we always had, I think, good fortune of discussing their jobs and, mm-hmm. and around the house. So I got a little bit of insights of what they did.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because, should I go a little deeper in the conversation?
Sure, yeah, this is intriguing.
Yeah, because it was actually not until my dad's funeral mm-hmm. that I got to know a lot of his coworkers.
Gotcha.
And understand a lot more of what he did and the
sure.
people he did. So even though we share things around the house, it was more superficial. And I think after his passing, I was able to see some more the things that he did, which was quite interesting. So
does that change, not to get toe off track, we're on question number three, so I don't forget, but does that change how you communicate to your children, because you've got two younger
yes,
children, how
yes.
you communicate to them and bring them into kind of what you do, or do you keep those two things just separate?
No, my kids have been to our factories mm-hmm. that's even before COVID for sure, but I want to make sure that they know what I do. Mm-hmm. Actually, my kids describe at school that I'm a locksmith. So actually, in the show and tell, they had
sure.
with dad some see-through cylinder cores that they took to school
yep.
for show and tell. So it's been quite excited. I think it's important for them to understand what I do.
Yeah.
A lot of times they thought, when they were young, they thought I worked for the airlines because I was traveling
sure,
all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
But now they understand I'm a locksmith. But very exciting.
that's a whole story in and of itself right there. That's impressive. That you should share that story more frequently. All right, question number four. What time do you normally go to bed?
Between 8:30 and 9.
Okay.
So we usually read a book to my kids. If I don't fall asleep in their bed, then I'll head to my bed. But usually I'm a early bird and early riser.
So you go to bed 8:39. So what's your normal wake time?
4:35.
There you go. All right.
So start early, try to exercise, and then start working. I feel that the mornings is easier to control than mm-hmm. the afternoons. So usually try to get that out of the way, the exercise piece. And then at the end of the day, leave some more family time with the kids for us to eat dinner and enjoy the evening. So Try to go to bed early and wake up early.
Now, earlier we were chatting and you mentioned that getting control of your calendar, and that's something that you talk to your team about all the time is impactful. And I think that kind of correlates. You can control the morning. As the day progresses, it's harder to kind of control that. But those kind of two things go in correlation, right? Controlling your calendar and then controlling the start of your day.
Yeah, I think it's almost true routines, right? I have a routine at home and routine when I'm on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but that early mornings, I think that I can control the end of the afternoon calendar when I'm home. But usually when I'm on the road, I'm trying to spend time with the teams and we or customers or suppliers
sure.
that the days seem to go longer to dinners.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harder to control.
But yeah.
the mornings at a hotel, I can go to the gym and do things on my own. So that's why, focus on that aspect. But I think controlling the calendar is something that all of us don't do very often, but I think it's a very important thing for us to not let the calendar control our day-to-day in our lives, but us control that piece.
Yeah. Or you could just also find more customers that like to go to bed at 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Not many of them, but I think anybody with young kids,
yeah.
I think can correlate. I think as the kids get older and have a different routines, things change. But I think it's for me, it's a good balance to go to early.
Absolutely. All right. Last question. Number five, what's something that you've always wanted to do as a child or something that you always wanted to do as a child, but never got to do? Something you think you missed out on?
Oh, there's when I was a kid, I think first I wanted to be a highway patrol. I was born in Brazil and mm-hmm. they play Chips, the TV show,
mm-hmm.
very often. So I went on that kick. And then the second kick was to be a trash man, because I felt riding on the trash truck would be very, very neat.
Yes, it would.
But then that fell off. But there's still, I think as I grew up, I always had the desire to be a teacher, a math teacher for kids.
Okay.
So it's, I think, something there in my spare time.
Yeah.
I like to, you know, I'm a coach for my kids, but I think I would love to do a part-time teaching for kids sometime in my life.
Well, you're teaching math now regularly, aren't you? This is part of the job.
That's my finance guy, not me.
Yeah, but, there you go.
But no, I enjoy math growing up, and I enjoy kids. Yeah. So putting two and two together, I think it would be a fun job.
So highway patrol officer, garbage man, and now you're a locksmith. I mean,
moving up, moving on up. Just career development.
Incredible journey.
As its best.
There you go. Well, congratulations. You made it through rapid fire. We'll give you a score of 812.
I was shooting for 850, but next time.
Well,
third visit.
We'll keep working on it. Keep working on it. Well, thanks again for coming in. Obviously, we had you on. I was trying to look back. I think it's been close to 2 years since you were here last. A lot of things have happened in the last 2 years, just a minor few things. And so I want to get your thoughts on a couple of factors in regards to leadership. We were walking through the back earlier, and you said, how did the podcast go last time? And one of the things that I was sharing with you is I had a lot of feedback from the employees at your organization that said it was really cool to see you in a different setting where there was a little bit more personable side. So, and I think one of the things I took away from the conversation last time from just even the recording was just kind of your concepts on leadership, thought philosophy. So I want to say a couple things before we get into the conversation today, which we're going to be talking about the importance of making decisions. But one of the things that has stood out to me in the conversations that I've had with you, and even more so today, is the level of humility and the level of retrospective thinking. And those are, I think, good attributes, and we could really unpack those for probably 45 minutes. But those are really interesting attributes that I think all leaders need to be mindful of, because, you know, when you're talking about some of the decisions that you've had to make or some of the things that you're trying to work on in your organization, you oftentimes reference, and this is not one conversation but multiples, you'll reference, well, we also have to think about the things that we need to work on and how we're not at the top of our game, right? And so that's really cool to me, because it shows a high level of self-awareness of, it's not just, hey, we're the best and we're doing everything right, but it also encourages and challenges me for my perspective to think about what are areas that we need to work on and not make sure that we're walking that line where we're not just being haughty and arrogant, but we have a level of humility. So I appreciate that just from our conversations that we've had.
No, I think that's how part of who I am. I think always growing up and going through different stages, I think being humble and I think it serves myself, and I think serves the business well, mm-hmm. as well. I think we can learn from a lot of people, I think, and we can always be better. Mm-hmm. And I think if we take that approach, that is almost approach, but also paranoia, that, you know, we can always learn, we can always be better. And I think we become, at the end of the day, more approachable if we're humble as well. And people are more willing to share their ideas and share their thoughts, mm-hmm. If we have that frame of mind.
We understand the frustrations HOA board members and property managers face when deciding the best solution for their HOA and pool security. Should we use a keypad, hand out keys, or install a key card system? Do we even need cameras? These are some of the questions that are difficult to navigate, and we're here to help. At LockDock Security, we've spent over 20 years working with homeowners associations and property managers to find the system that best fits the pool and HOA needs. Camera systems for the front gate or front entrance, key card systems for the pool gates, or simply updating the gate so that it meets safety and code compliance. We like to take the guesswork out of the process to answer any questions and help find the right solution. Our mission is to help you protect your people and your property, and that includes pools. Contact our team today to schedule your free consultation for your community. So this is something, and I want to kind of jump in and hit this because I think it's going to give some context for people that don't know who you are. And so this is probably, again, from we just talked about humility. This is probably not a conversation that you like to dive into very regularly. But the role that you operate in an organization, so you're part of a global organization. You're the head of the Americas division. Give the listeners that may not have any clue as to who you are, what kind of what does that look like? Because you're leading a large number of companies and a large number of employees. So give us some kind of some of the stats and dats.
Yeah, so we are we have roughly about 10,000 employees. Okay. Through Canada all the way to Latin America. Roughly 27 different manufacturing facilities throughout the regions. Our business is about $2.3 billion in terms of top line. Mm-hmm. So it's an organization that we have a business model that's very decentralized. So we try to empower the leaders of the different organizations or the different countries or regions. Mm-hmm. But it's a fun job. So it's some of those numbers are big, but I think at the end of the day, it's a fun environment, and hopefully, you know, we'll continue to make it an exciting place to work, to grow, to develop, and I think that's how I see. I don't see it as a big business, as a mm-hmm. big organization. See, it's a collection of a lot of very small, exciting business that we have in our portfolio.
Yeah. Well, and how many total? Because the organization of ASSA ABLOY is the parent organization for how many total companies now?
So we have. It's in the hundreds. I don't have the exact number, to be honest. We actually acquired 300 companies in the past 10 years. So yep. It's a lot of acquisition and organic growth. So the company is actually quite new. So it's only 27 years old.
Yep.
So it's a global company, around $9.5-$10 billion mm-hmm. In worldwide. So we break it down into different divisions, and I'm responsible for one of the divisions. But having that philosophy of decentralized management, decentralized organization, empower the people and the teams to develop their own business.
Yeah.
And for me, that was what was attractive about the company.
So the interesting part, in moving into kind of a topic of conversation about decisions and having to make decisions. So. And that's why I wanted to give some context. So you've got 10,000 employees. You've the total businesses that you're responsible for somewhere a little over $2 billion. It's nothing to just shake a fist at. Like that's a real number. Decisions are being made, just tons of them every single day. And you're talking about decentralized. You're talking about giving people the empowerment to make those decisions. So. We can kind of break the conversation up into a couple of different ways. Number one, in the kind of responsibility that you have and maybe the coaching that you give on the importance of just making a decision. Because I feel like in our current maybe environment and culture, a lot of times people just are fearful to make a decision because they don't want it to be wrong. So we can talk a little bit about that, just the importance of making decisions. And then two, how you disseminate or empower those decisions to be made across a level of 10,000 team members, 10,000 employees, because that's one decision that you make can impact 10,000 people, but one decision that somebody in a smaller team can make can impact hundreds. So you've got a lot of brevity of decision. So let's talk a little bit about the importance of one, just being decisive, right? Because that's we have people that flounder on indecision. So what are your thoughts on just owning a decision and moving forward?
Yeah, I think the worst decision is not making a decision, mm-hmm. right? And I think if you break it down, I think that the real fear of people is not making a wrong decision, but actually giving the news that decision was not right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fear or the lack of decision making is not when you making that decision left or right, but how I'm going to feel 6 months from now or a month from now that I that I made the bad decision, mm-hmm. and how the organization, how my peers, how my manager will look at me, what's mm-hmm. going to be the approach or the impact on myself mm-hmm. for making that bad decision.
Yep.
So I think a lot of the fear is not around the decision itself, but the consequences of that decision.
Yeah.
And I think if we focus on what is the organization's and people's behavior once that bad decision was made, or not the bad, but was just, you know, maybe not the right timing or not the right priority, and make that an okay topic to be talked about and not a taboo, mm-hmm. I think that will roll back into the decision-making process. And I think all of us, you know, I lost count of how many bad decisions I've made. I mean, it's natural of us to make bad decisions. I think nobody is batting in 100. Mm-hmm. But the minute that we can comfortably share those shortcomings, the minute that we can talk about those things openly and admit our shortcomings, yeah. I think you create an environment that it's okay to talk about bad news. It's okay to talk about wrong decisions. Because mm-hmm. I think that is the fear we talked earlier, you know, of every leader is by the time the news comes to us, it's not a storm, it's a tsunami. And mm-hmm. and if you create that culture of it's okay to put a, you know, the fish on the table, then I think it trickles back to the decision point to say, hey guys, it's okay to, let's make a decision because either way, it's gonna be okay. And I think, you know, we talked before about leadership traits. And mm-hmm. I think one of the, for me, a very good leadership characteristic is consistency. Mm-hmm. And if a leader is consistent in the good and the bad, in the good outcome and in the bad outcome, I think you will motivate the organization to make quicker decisions and be more agile.
I heard one individual say that one of the things that they try to communicate to their team is it's okay to make mistakes. It's not okay to not make a decision.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of sums up some of what you're saying. It's we all fear, I say, at a point of, okay, what's the outcome if this is not the right decision? And so then we defer and defer and defer and defer just to not make a decision, ultimately making it a bigger issue because you just didn't decide.
Yeah, the defers, I think, is the killer.
Yeah.
You know, I think is not making a decision or that waiting period or that review or this meeting, this presentation, this mm-hmm. thinking. It's all of a sudden makes the job not as exciting as it should be.
Yeah.
If we trust the people and it was okay to make some mistakes.
So that kind of breaks open a interesting line of conversation because it's effectively finding a way to make it to maybe a happy medium where you're making it not as uncomfortable to make a mistake, but not so comfortable as that it's not impactful to make a mistake. And I guess that's a question, is how do you balance the okay to make a wrong decision, but also let's not be haphazard in our decision making?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a balance, right, to have. But I think also is if you're making a lot of decisions,
you
can spread the wealth. If two don't, you know, it's like gardening. If a few don't germinate, it's okay.
Sure.
But if you're planting a single tree, then that decision, it's very important and very impactful. But I think even when you're planting the tree, even the big, you're going to have decisions that are going to be very impactful that mm-hmm. you might not sway your way.
And, yeah.
And that's okay.
And if it's a minority, then if it's a minority of your decisions that are bad, then
if it was one out of the many trees, then it's okay. But then if it's starting to be in all of us, you know, I think I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we can talk about, yeah, it's okay to make mistakes, but mm-hmm. if you consistently make mistakes, then it's not okay either.
Can you copy this key? That's a question we get asked about 3,422 times a year. And how can you actually be sure that the person who asked that question is supposed to get a copy of that key? Well, we think you should always know who can copy your keys to your business and your home, because it could be your neighbor, an old employee, a contractor, or even worse, your mother-in-law. At LockDock Security, we believe in protected key systems, so you always know who has a copy of your key. To find out more, visit LockDock.net or stop by our Charlotte location. LockDock Security, helping you protect your people and your property.
In an organization of your size, and obviously you've got teams that have been built and things kind of operate in a certain way, once a decision is made, what is the, I'm trying to think of, is it, because I don't want to necessarily phrase it as a struggle, but what is the process of communicating a decision so that everybody is on, either on board or at least aware of it? Because I feel like, and we've talked about this before, even in the organization as our size, 45 people, we still struggle with getting a decision or an answer communicated to everybody equally. I can't imagine that process for 10,000. What are some successes that you found in kind of dispersing communication as it relates to a kind of a major decision?
I think no matter when, we never communicate enough.
Yeah.
Even when you believe you've done all the communications tool, we always underestimate the importance of communication, or if we have done enough. Mm-hmm. I'll say we always come up short on that front. I think we have learned a lot during the pandemic, mm-hmm. Both on the decisions and the communications standpoint. And actually, okay. During the pandemic, I recorded a daily vlog, mm-hmm. just to keep people informed. But that vlog didn't reach everybody. So
sure.
We had to have several different formats to reach everyone. And even to that point, you couldn't get to 100%. So mm-hmm. I think it's a level of paranoia, and also a level of, there's a famous saying that, repetition doesn't spoil the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to say the same thing over and over. Because
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times we believe that we communicated, we did a video, we did a blog, or we wrote something, a piece of paper, and that, mm-hmm. We're done, let's move on, and everybody gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. I think we sometimes underestimate the power of repetition. And it takes a lot of times to get things across and to get those yeah. decisions across. So I think it's continuing to do so, but also finding new methods, because some people wanted to communicate via text message, mm-hmm. other via videos, other via emails, other via phone calls. So mm-hmm. you have to do as broad of a broadcast when necessary, but also as a target to the mode that people are most acceptable to receive the communication.
It's interesting because you think about it in terms of just the way that we all receive information now. Something happens. Inevitably, right now that we're sitting here, some type of a news event is happening. And there's, however many hundreds of news channels that are reporting on it right now. And there's a live stream somewhere of something happening. And we're sitting here having this conversation. And that is by far the least important thing that we're going to worry about. Now, when we finish up with this, we may pick up our phone and see a post on Twitter that would give us a subset, a couple of lines of that information. And if it's sparks of interest, maybe you go watch more information on it, or maybe you go read a full article on it. But it may not even spark anything, and you just scroll on and never think about it again. So in terms of that same thing, you're sitting there recording a vlog every day to try to communicate out, and somebody's like, yeah, I missed the last 3 days. And they missed something that was really important that was going to impact them. So now you've got to figure out, how do I break that down and get that information to people? And the repeating part of it, I guess, of relevant information is kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I think it's an element of what you want is this consistency that mm-hmm. you wanted to touch in and day out. And mm-hmm. what element is fresh news important for that day. But I think from an organization perspective, I think it's also important that communication is a two-way communication.
Mm-hmm.
So people can communicate backwards that you may address mm-hmm. their own needs, because, I think it's very important that when you do especially a broad communication, one, there's a vehicle for feedback loop, but also a vehicle for further clarification or further understanding.
Yeah.
And for us, that was very important during COVID, because a lot of people reach out to me, asking, but what you said, did you mean X, Y, and Z, or I work in this location that has something different, mm-hmm. but that didn't apply to me, what should I do? So, yeah. So making sure it's a two-way communication, I think, is very, very important. One, I think it drives more engagement that you can, people can feel heard, but also it may lead to a point that you didn't even think about, an mm-hmm. application they didn't even think about.
Can I say that makes me feel significantly better that when you send out communication, people comment back and say, when you said this, what did you mean? Because I get that regularly. And I'm like, no, well, I'm glad you asked that question because that is absolutely not what I intended, but it got, I misinterpreted it when I was communicating out. So having the ability, and I'm, which begs another question, is in an organization of your size, you send this message out, you get a percentage of people that are going to communicate back to you and ask those questions for clarifications. Then you got this large percentage that says, Lucas has got a lot going on. I'm just not going to bother with him. Like, it's not important to him. How do you, is that just part of the repeating process to open up those doors? Because inevitably there's a lot of people that are going to be in that mentality. You're too busy and it's not going to matter to you.
I think there's a lot of buckets you can put in, right? Mm-hmm. People that actually don't want to communicate, people yeah. that want it but are not, don't want to take the initiative, and people that will. I think it's once you start interacting with the people who do communicate, then that spreads through it.
Gotcha.
You know, I had a lot of times that I responded or I communicated with somebody that replied or gave some feedback, and then a colleague said, oh, I heard you talk to such and such, and
sure.
Wanted to reach out to share my point of view. So I think it takes time. So it's not something that's going to be overnight, that people are going to mm-hmm. Feel the connection with you. They're going to talk to you. So I think it's you got to show consistency of that and being open to that dialogue and being open to feedback. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times, even during COVID, we'll put procedures in places and we'll figure out that it's not working. So I had to say, hey, yesterday we made a bad decision. We shifted today. We're going to do something else. Mm-hmm. And I think people seeing that side of openness and awareness, I think it kind of breaks down that barrier of, oh, that guy is very busy. Everybody in the organization, everybody is very busy as well. So mm-hmm. for me, for them to take time of their day to listen to my blog,
yeah.
it's a big, I'm very thankful because they're as busy as I am.
Yeah.
I'm not the busiest person in our group.
Yeah. That's very interesting context on that, because you're basically opening up and then you're opening up and sharing, waiting for people to ask questions, or when people do, then effectively it's almost like a cumulative effect. The more that you're responding to the questions that are asked, the more two-way dialogue is going to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So now you've got decisions that are being made, you're encouraging decisions, and then it's the question of how are we communicating that out, and how does our team understand the impact of those decisions? So one of the things that you mentioned was some of your employee surveys, some of the stuff that you're trying to work on and make a good place for people to want to work, and one of those things was communicating or making decisions. Can you talk a little bit about how you've implemented that and why that was important to you?
Yeah, I think we do a very large pulse survey mm-hmm. Quite often and measure ourselves in terms of what areas we're doing well, what areas we need to work. And then I think when it comes to decision-making and communications, I think it actually goes hand in hand, because we can communicate the decisions, but I think to employees is not about the communications, about the action. Mm. Right. You can have a good talk, but it's about the walk into the game. So I think once employees see the organization making quick decisions, they see their colleagues in action doing those things, that's when I think the light bulb goes off. That's when the difference goes on, the attitudes of, yeah, it was a nice message, but actually I'm seeing this in action. Oh, this, you know, the approval for this machine happened so fast. Wow, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this new initiative was approved pretty quick. Wow. Mm-hmm. So once you create those wow moments and people see in their surroundings, mm-hmm. that's when those triggers are going to do. Mm-hmm. Until we get there, then you can have the perception that, yeah, you can say the decisions are made quick, but in my everyday,
I'm not feeling it.
Not feeling my expense report takes 3 days, or mm-hmm. you know, their day to day might be impacted, and a lot of times, the feeling that decisions are not being made quick mm-hmm. are small things.
Yeah.
Small things in their day to day life might be not even be necessary to work, but things that impact their day mm-hmm. related to parking or related yeah. to food or related to things that we take it for granted mm-hmm. That the decisions are not made enough. But I think, and that's what's important for us when we do the survey, that we have actions behind it. Mm-hmm. So let's not try to boil the ocean, but let's pick 3 things from the survey and really do it. Yeah. And that's, we have the same approach on Net Promoter Score. So mm-hmm. once we receive the feedback from customers, we always say, what are the 3 things the whole organization is going to get behind? And how can we really move the needle on those 3 things? And for us, you know, focus is very important. So once we get the survey, the actions actually start very local where the survey was taking place. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want 9,000 opinions to water down
sure.
the sense of a small location. So the location takes ownership to say, those are the 3 things we heard loud and clear that we're not doing good at.
Yeah.
Let's pick those 3 and focus on. If you try to do 10 things, you would never get done.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I'm jotting down some notes here, some takeaways, because that's one of the things that I think you just tucked in there was the importance of the decision to the individual, right? So you're working on this major new initiative that's soaking up weeks and weeks of time, but somebody's asked about the pothole in the parking lot that they keep impacting their day every single day. And that seems like an insignificant decision in the grand scheme of things, but to that group of folks, it is massively more important than the whatever it is that you're working on, and keeping that in context, that's huge.
We always underestimate those small things,
yeah,
and the impact on our employees. Mm. And if we listen to them, there's a lot of small things that would make their mm-hmm. Workplace a much better place to be. So I think it's, you know, don't underestimate the parking lot, the bathrooms, the cafeteria, those small things, that there is a lot of opportunities. You know, I think even for us, it's, you know, we see a lot of opportunities on that front, because a lot of from our manufacturing sites might be very old, and how can we upgrade those things and make it a more well-being place to be and go to work?
Yeah. I'm trying to bring things in context, because a lot of times I can get way too broad or vague. Here recently, so we have a couple of regular all team meetings, and we have a string of communication that goes out to alert people of it, and it goes through a text message. And for whatever reason, part of that technology lags at times, and the text message doesn't go out on time. So a meeting is supposed to start at 7:45. They're supposed to get a text message 15 minutes ahead with the link, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. To me, it's not a big deal, because I have a link on my calendar. I can jump into it. No big deal. Someone recently mentioned it, that it's becoming a problem because that communication has become inconsistent, and is there a better way that we can do that? So in terms, like, that's their parking lot. Like, that's their parking lot issue. To me, it's not a big deal, and it's the minor of 1,000 things that need to be fixed, but it's impeding their day. It's impeding the start of their day for various reasons, and that is something that needs to be attacked with vigor and be fixed, because to them, that just looks like it does, that they're basically their communication is not important.
I think, I don't want to bring COVID back very yeah. often, but I think one thing that it taught us very well in COVID is that we're not all the same.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has different things. And I think if we start looking at people individually mm-hmm. and understanding what is their parking lot, what mm-hmm. is their struggles, what are their personalities, then I think all of us can be a better employer.
Yeah.
And treating people and understanding what things make them tick, what things are important or not important to them. And that will vary throughout the organization. And I think for us to listen to their needs, I think it's much more important versus trying to, you know, and for us as a large company, it's hard to, you know, let's just paint a white brush and try to cover everybody. When a lot of times that's not the case. And for us, you know, we had, you know, keep our factories working while people were working from home and, mm-hmm. and those two different needs, yeah. you know, and we actually had to tailor two types of communications because the communications for people in our work in our productions was very different from the people working sure, from yeah. home and addressings and people working from home had different challenges.
Yeah. Different challenges, yeah. different concerns.
So I think addressing and understanding those different challenges, I think it's, you know, taught us very well that, you know, definitely from an employee relationship, one size does not fit all.
Mm. No, that's very, very impactful. Well, I've got a couple of new takeaways for today. Trying to boil the ocean. I like that one. I wrote that down because I've never heard that one before.
No. it's a lot of water there.
It is a lot of water. And then putting your fish on the table. No. I like those. I'm going to start using those pretty regularly.
Yeah, usually this is a stinky fish, not a fresh fish from the ocean, right? So I think it's, you know, the things that have been sticking around that, you know, people know it's smelling, but hey, mm-hmm. where is it? And I think if we
just get it on the table.
Very, very often we do not put that on the table. And I think it's important and to put the problem there and discuss. A lot of times it's not an easy discussion, but after, I guarantee everybody's going to feel better about it.
Just to kind of tie a bow on kind of the decision thing, maybe it's not worth underlining, but I'm going to say it anyway just because it's fun. The parking lot situation, because I think that's a tangible analogy to look at. If there was an answer that said, hey, Bob, we understand the parking lot needs to be fixed, but we don't have the ability to fix it right now. It's going to get fixed in June of next year. You know, maybe that's not even applicable, but just it's going to get fixed in June of next year. At least that is a decision that says this is when it's going to happen instead of just a constant, the parking lot needs to be fixed. The parking lot needs to be fixed. Is that kind of what you're saying? Is it at least responding, giving a decision, even if it can't be immediately fixed, but letting them know that you hear it and that there is going to be action?
Absolutely. I think it's one, if you can share the priorities, mm-hmm. say, listen, Bob, the parking lot's very important, but the bathroom is number one, you know, the cafeteria is number two, parking lot's number three. We're going to get into June, mm-hmm. but you better deliver in June.
Sure, yeah.
Because otherwise, you just lost Bob.
Yeah.
And if you want to be even better, deliver in May.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to get a lot of trust from Bob. And I think it's, and if you can communicate to Bob between now and June,
yeah.
where we are,
yeah.
even better. And then I think sometimes it's important to bring Bob as part of the solution, right? Well, help define what would you like to see the parking lot.
Is sure.
just a pothole or what else is broken? And I think if you have people as part of the solution, it's mm-hmm. it's very important. You know, that's what we do a lot in terms of Kaizens in the manufacturing world is having our colleagues be part of the solution. And mm-hmm. that brings a lot of the ownership throughout.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, a wealth of knowledge today. I've got some notes here. And these are the type of conversations that we could probably sit here for a couple of hours and unpack a lot of stuff. But I would also like to digest them in small chunks for our listeners and for myself as a whole. So again, thank you for having taken the opportunity to sit down with us and just kind of unpack some of those things. I think these are really interesting insights that are applicable at whatever position you are in a business and whatever role that you occupy. But it's really cool to hear it from an individual that is doing it at a very large scale and how we can kind of digest it at different levels.
It was another great chat, a great cup of coffee. It's been a while, but it was great to see you. And that's why I wanted to do this in person because it's I think there's a lot a lot of chemistry that we've missed in the past year or 2 years, and I think it's important to get it back.
Well, Lucas, again, thank you very much for joining us and taking time out of your schedule to sit with us today at the table. As always, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. We've got a brand new episode coming out next Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss a single one of them, so make sure you subscribe. LockDoc.net/podcast, and we will see you next time.